What's better in life than a bottle of wine, great food, and an amazing conversation?
My name is Kate Sullivan, and I am the host of To Dine For.
I'm a journalist, a foodie, a traveler with an appetite for the stories of people who are hungry for more. Dreamers, visionaries, artists, those who hustle hard in the direction they love. I travel with them to their favorite restaurant to hear how they did it. This show is a toast to them and their American dream. To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. For 115 years, American National has remained committed to helping people and communities make a real difference in their lives. American National supports great local community organizations led by the kind of people you hear about on To Dine For. People who are inspired to make a difference and inspire others in return. American National's philosophy is helping where it's needed helps us all. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, and the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Dine For, the podcast, where we meet the world's most creative and innovative minds at their favorite restaurant. On today's episode is Elizabeth Cutler.
We find our inner strengths when we give ourselves the space to go there. At this point in our culture, we've stripped a lot of that out. And so we are very interested in providing experiences for people that are different from everyday life, but necessary to who we are as humans.
Elizabeth Cutler is an entrepreneur best known for co-creating the fitness phenomenon SoulCycle with Julie Rice. After growing to more than 60 studios, Cutler and Rice sold the company in 2016. Since then, Cutler has invested in and advised dozens of companies from startups to later stages. She is particularly interested in new ideas rooted in community, health, and emotional intelligence. For the past 4 years, Cutler and Rice have been creating Peoplehood, a place to meaningfully connect in real time with yourself and others in person and online. I am fascinated by Elizabeth's career trajectory, and I can't wait to dive into this conversation with Elizabeth Cutler. Elizabeth, it's wonderful to see you on this Monday morning. I'm so excited about this. So yeah. we're gonna have a good time. We're gonna have a great conversation.
Kate, it's so nice to meet you. I'm so excited to spend some time with you.
Well, first of all, you have had a fascinating career trajectory. I can't wait to hear more. But I'm gonna begin this podcast the way I begin all my podcasts, by asking your favorite restaurant. And you are in Chelsea, you're in the heart of New York City. Sometimes folks take me back to where they're from. Others choose a restaurant that sits squarely where they live now. I'm just interested, if you could pick one restaurant, where would it be?
One? You know, it's so nice to be here with you, Kate. Thank you so much for having me this morning. If I had to pick, I think that when you're thinking about restaurants, especially when you have a family, they're sort of like, what do I want to do with my family? And then what do I want to do? What am I personally
yes,
curious about?
Totally.
And particularly when the kids were younger. So our favorite family restaurant in New York City is called Shabutatsu.
I've been there.
Have you? Really?
Yes. Robert Refkin, who is the CEO of Compass, chose that as his favorite restaurant.
Yeah, oh my God, that's amazing. We should probably meet each other then.
Yes. So, okay, tell me, because it's such a wonderful, charming place. Why do you love it?
Well, we started going there when the kids were young because it's such a great place to do stuff together. Yes. And it doesn't matter if you have a newborn or if you have an 8-year-old or if you have a 20-year-old or if you bring your parents, everyone has a great time at that place because you're making your own food. It's delicious. You feel like you're transported into we've done a lot of traveling as a family. We've been to Japan 3 times. So we like going there just because we love Japanese food and we love the Japanese aesthetic and aspects of that anyway. So anyhow, we love it. We just have always loved that restaurant. The kids, if you ever ask them where they want to go to Shabutatsu.
Oh, I love that. And that is, for those who are listening who aren't familiar, this is in the East Village of New York City. It is the Shabu Shabu experience, which means you actually cook at the table and you dip, whether it's vegetables or meat, into boiling pots of water. And then you have all these sauces and there's so much more. But it is a communal experience. It's not just dining out. You're doing something together. It's sort of an event, isn't it?
It really is. And I'm so glad that you mentioned that. And I'm so excited that you've been there. Did you go with friends or family?
I went to shoot the PBS show there to Dine For.
Oh, you did it with them.
I did it with Robert Refkin, who's the founder of Compass. Yes. So it was an amazing experience. And Bon Yagi, who started the restaurant almost 40 years ago in New York City, brings such an elevated story and experience to going there when you find out his personal story of coming to New York with really nothing and selling vegetables out of his car, and the empire of Asian restaurants, specifically Japanese, that he's built. It's the true New York American dream story. So I love that you picked that.
Well, I feel so lucky that I get to learn more about my favorite restaurant because of your podcast, and get to go back and listen. I listened to a bunch of your conversations prior to this, but I miss Robert. I'm looking forward to listening to that. But the other thing that I think is really interesting, no matter where you live, is who's growing our food. And so if I do it for myself, I'm really interested in people who are taking the food from the farm and turning it into experiences. And I think that's a really cool thing to do. There's a woman I used to work with who does event experiences around a farm that is in Western Massachusetts, and she puts on these dinners. And so if I had to say what's my personal favorite, it would be something like that. There's a fantastic lunch that they do up at Stone Barns, if you want to just go experience that. And so I've been really really enjoying the regenerative food scene and places to support those farmers and experience what they're, the magic that they're making coming out of the ground.
That's awesome. Well, I want to dive into your story, not only what you've done, but where you're going. And I'd love to hear what you were doing just prior to SoulCycle. Because I'm wondering, what was your background and what were you doing at the moment you had the idea for SoulCycle?
Oh my goodness. I had moved to New York City from Colorado. I'm originally from Chicago.
Oh, the suburbs or Chicago proper?
I was born in Chicago proper, but like a lot of people, my parents felt like we needed more room. So we moved to the suburbs, and I have such a warm place in my heart for Chicago. We have so much family there, and I just remember so many good times in that beautiful city. I, when the kids were young, I said, what's the greatest American city? And they would say, Chicago. And then when they got their New York kids, as soon as they realized what I was asking them, they're like, no, it's New York. So we had this ongoing battle in our family about the greatest. The kids now say that New York is the greatest city in the United States, but Chicago is the greatest American city. So everybody wins. It's kind of funny.
Love that.
Yeah. So I grew up in Chicago. My parents were both in entrepreneurial environments. I ended up at the University of Colorado in Boulder for 4 years. I loved being there. It was such a surprise. I never thought I would go to school in Colorado. And I ended up moving to Telluride after I graduated via thinking I would become an investment banker and realizing that wasn't for me. And then understanding that I needed to get a job. And I had worked in my mom's real estate office outside of Chicago for summers or whenever she needed help. She was the top producer in the Chicago area for 30 years.
And where, what town?
In Lake Forest, up in the northern suburbs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I worked for her. And after I realized that I just wasn't going to be an investment banker, and she put me through college, she really wanted to strangle me when I told her I wasn't going to take a job offer. And I, now looking back, I can't believe that I had the conviction to do something like that, to just say no to something when I really needed a job. But I ended up moving to Telluride. I had convinced my mom to buy a house there as an investment the previous year. And I don't even know why I did that. We never had a second home growing up. Like, she just happened to be in the real estate business and she was very successful. And I just thought it would be a good investment. Anyway, she bought a house there. I ended up moving there. I lived there for 10 years. I really learned about community there. I learned about, like, I used to go hiking with my friends. Just to kind of like, honestly, it was like part therapy, part workout, part like take the dogs for a walk, just take a break in the day because it's such a beautiful place. And I met my husband on a ski vacation and I ended up moving to New York. And when I was living in New York, I found that I missed that kind of connection and camaraderie that came from those walks. I didn't even realize I was working out. And we had two kids and I gained so much weight when I was pregnant. I had a terrible time losing weight. And a good friend of mine said, have you tried cardio? And I never even thought about hiking as cardio because it was just walking with my friends. It was like more therapy than that. And she took me to a spin class. I had the most profound experience in there. And I realized if I could do that, really anybody could do that. And I started to think about what it would feel like if I felt joy, if I could tap into joy while I was moving, and how that kind of connection would allow me to like really commit to finding fitness in my life, because I really hate to work out. And so I just had this big, big aha moment, and I went home and kind of forgot about it. Two little babies at home. And it just started to be a situation where I couldn't, it was like someone was whispering to me. Someone was talking to me. I don't know what it was, but I feel like one morning I woke up and I thought, if I'm not listening to that voice, what am I listening to? Like that is something that lives inside me. And so I told my husband, I said, I want to start a company. I want to start in a recycling studio in New York City. I have a really clear vision about what I want it to feel like and look like. And I think I want to do that. And he was like, you're going to ruin your life. You have two little kids. You're going to be working 24/7. Like, how are you going to do this? And I was like, it's going to be fine, which is such an entrepreneurial thing to say. It's going to be fine, having no idea what you're about to get yourself into.
I'm just wondering, what was that initial class that you were had sort of a transcendent experience in? Like, what was it about that class that kind of triggered the idea? You said you were missing out on community. Did you have a great conversation with someone? Was it an inspiring teacher? Was it just that rush you feel after a workout where you're in like sky high and you're like, I should do this for a living? Like, what was it?
You know, what it was that all of those things that you just described could have been there for me, but weren't there for me. And I realized, like, if you look at the model of gyms, historically, at that time, and it's still true today, that's a loss leader. That's not a profit center for them. Those are services that they have to provide in order to satisfy their membership, but they want to spend as little money as they can on group fitness. So I kind of started thinking about, well, if it's your profit center, then you can fully invest in the people who deliver the experience to your customer. So you kind of invert it. And if we can deliver every single time that someone shows up, they will really feel like we've got them. Like they will feel held in a way that is unconsciously emotional, unconsciously spiritual, unconsciously deep, but like just customer service.
Okay, this is fascinating. So you mentioned that class was where you triggered the idea, but it wasn't how great the class was. It was the absence of all the things you felt like the class needed.
Yes.
Ah, wow. So you saw the potential for it being so much better. And you said, okay, I want to start this. How did you then meet your co-founder?
So I was talking to, there were some good teachers out there. And so I was talking to one of them and she was saying, you should meet my friend, Julie. She is saying the same things to me that you're saying to me. And I thought, okay, great. I would love to meet Julie. So Julie and I got on what we call the best blind date ever. Mm-hmm. And we met at Soho House in New York City in the Meatpacking District for lunch. And it was me and Alan, my husband at the time, and Ruth, who became our third partner, and Julie, the four of us. And Julie and I just started, it's like one of those blind dates where like, it was so nice that those other people were there, but like nothing mattered but the conversation that we were having. Mm-hmm. And it was so, we just clicked. We've all had that experience and we all know that experience. Like we just totally clicked. We started this conversation that day. And honestly, here we are in, you know, 2024, we're still having that same conversation. Like the conversation just never ended. What we both saw was that we could create fitness as lifestyle, that it could really feel like an experience that we could look forward to, that we could schedule into our lives, that could become a practice for us, that could become a community for us, and all of those things that we had, you know, kind of hoped for. Julie had come out of the entertainment business. She had worked on brands. You know, I understood a lot about customer service. I had worked with one of the things that my mom did was kind of reinvent marketing for real estate. Instead of those tiny little pictures, she just did one house at a time. So I had just also been in that world throughout my career of seeing how to spotlight and market. And so I could really appreciate Julie's perspectives around turning things into brands. That was what she had done in Hollywood.
So explain to folks who aren't familiar with SoulCycle, because so many of us are, where it's just cycling classes, right? It's spin classes, but they're very different. It has a cult-like following and it has a different
deeper dimension than just being on a bike and cycling. Can you explain what that is and why you think it's become so successful?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked this question because it's funny. I have found myself very recently just jumping in, like, because you and I sort of know each other now. Mm-hmm. I forget that people don't know what SoulCycle is. And I spent 10 years explaining what SoulCycle was, and mm-hmm. people had a lot of responses to it. So I'd be delighted to answer that. So it's an indoor cycling class and an experience. It's 45 minutes. You check in, you walk through the door, you immediately feel like, okay, something different's going on here. The customer service at the front desk is excellent. People really care that you've walked in the front door. A lot of that has to do with what happened in our first location where we didn't have a sign. We were so excited to see you when you walked in the front door. It was like, oh, and so that kind of is something that got into our company DNA. And then you go into the room where the bikes are, and it's dark and it's candlelit, and you have shoes on that you have to clip into your bike. And we help you learn how to do that. We help you learn how to get as comfortable as you can get with the equipment. And then we have instructors who were trained to really deliver experiences. So they have music mm-hmm. appreciation. They know about how you work physically. They know about just how to take you on an arced journey so that you leave the room going back into the light of the reception area, going like, you go from the light to the dark, back to the light, going like, oh my God, what happened?
So what just happened? Yes. Yeah.
And people find it, you know, the bike meets you wherever you are, depending upon what is up for you. Like, some days you had too much cheesecake last night and you just need to like feel like you're letting that go. And some days your best friend's in the hospital because she's just been diagnosed with something terrible. And it's just like, where are you going to find the strength? Mm-hmm. And we find our inner strength when we give ourselves the space to go there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what Julie and I really believe is that at this point in our culture, we've stripped a lot of that out. And so we are very interested in providing experiences for people that are different from everyday life, but necessary to who we are as humans.
And it is for people who enjoy the thrill of a really hard, good workout. I feel like SoulCycle delivers directly to them. Yeah. Yes, you mentioned there are people who want to, you know, just need a little exercise. But I think we're understating how intense SoulCycle workouts can be for the person who wants to take it to the next level. I remember talking to Melody Hobson, and she was all about SoulCycle, and you know, all of the little things that the instructors say to the class, like, you know, how you do little things is how you do everything, that really motivate and get you to the next level. How much of that psychology, was that purposeful, or did that just develop over time because you develop such a following?
It was purposeful. Like, people are busy. You have to make the hour that they're spending with you really matter. And the one thing that instructors who were successful did well was to hold the energy for the group. So you will definitely get pushed harder than you ever would on your own. That is for sure.
Yes.
And if that is what, if you are in there to train, we got you. This is right. It's a bike. And I think that what happens is that people come for the physical, but they stay for the mental. They stay for that encouragement or that just sanity check that happens if you have somebody whose whole job is really to create a playlist that you can relate to and deliver messages that are authentic. So, like, I know who she's referring to, and it is true. I mean, I think that a lot of these things are true. And for me anyway, it's so interesting when people walk out of the class and they hear the different things, they hear what they had to hear that day. And it's really how we create a more accessible space inside ourselves that allows us to be who we want to be, right? Internalizing some of those messages.
Well, I'm just wondering from a marketing standpoint, because, you know, exercise is good for everyone, but not everyone can be sort of to the elite level to be pushed to that degree. And I feel like from a marketing standpoint, you are not appealing to the masses as much as you are appealing to the driven. Is that true?
Oh, or
is
I
that
totally disagree with that.
Okay.
No, I would totally disagree with that, only because, look, if you're type A and you want to work out, we got you. There are people who go in that room who are going through chemo and they can't really move their body much. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of people who've done that, and some days they can, but like, they just go in there to be in the music. They just go in there. And it was interesting. I met this woman who is a big science. What was her background? I think she was a student of epigenetics. like a PhD in epigenetics. And she just said, like, just being in the room with other people with that kind of intentionality is very powerful. It truly supports your health and longevity. I mean, it's just, that's a lot of the work that we're doing right now is just what it means to be in community. And so there's a lot that comes out of that. Look, I think that those rooms, if you are an intense athlete, we got you. If you are a person who is just starting on your fitness journey, it's fine. Like, anybody can do it.
We'll have more on this conversation in just a minute. But first, thank you to our sponsors.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
To Dine For, the podcast, is brought to you by American National, offering a broad suite of insurance solutions to protect what matters most to you. There's a funny thing about most insurance commercials, whether they feature lizards or birds or funny cartoon characters. It seems like they want you to think about anything but insurance. American National, on the other hand, has real local agents who get to know you, so they can help you reach better decisions about your insurance to make sure you're protecting what matters most to you. American National agents are part of your community. They're your neighbors. So whether it's solutions for your home, your small business, your farm, or your life, you can count on your local American National agent to make sure you get the discounts you deserve and the protection you need without paying for extras you don't. With American National, you get an ally, not just a web page. For a description of the American National companies, the products they write, in the states in which they're licensed, visit americannational.com/dine. Now back to our conversation.
Will you take me to the very beginning? You mentioned and you intimated that first space that you had with SoulCycle. What was that like, where people were out in the streets waiting to get in? Kind of talk me through that and what that was like for you.
Oh my gosh, we found that space on Craigslist.
Unbelievable.
I happened to find it within a week of meeting Julie. I had been combing Craigslist to try to find something inexpensive and, you know, something where we could test. And it was on the ground floor on 72nd Street on the Upper West Side. And there was no signage. It was a landmark building. The broker told me we were going to have a sign. I think he knew that we needed a sign, but he also knew that he wasn't going to be able to deliver a sign. But that's fine. It worked out. We put a rickshaw in front of the studio with a sign so that people could find us, because we were getting calls from people like, I'm standing in front of your building, I can't find it. We're like, we understand. So you come in, you go down a long hallway. The hallway also doubled as a locker room. You turn the corner and there we're standing. And that is why we were so excited to see you when you came into SoulCycle. We had that first location for 5 years. Yeah. And it was just great. And this ended up happening throughout all the studios, but many people met their best friends there. Many people met their spouses there. There are a lot of soul children. I mean, there's a lot of chosen family. There's, you know, a lot of really great, like, connective tissue and existing familial relationships. And so it was an honor. We had the time of our life building that company. We wake up in the morning and be so excited to go to work.
How hard was it to scale from that first to so many others? Like, what was the biggest pain point at the very beginning?
Honestly, just real estate. I'm not very good at math. And so, I mean, I shouldn't say that because I'm obviously fine at math, but I think that certain things, like, make you nervous. And I just wanted to make sure that we had enough money to grow and to create the experience for our customers that we wanted to. And the rents in New York City are extraordinary. And so I think that the issue was, like, the rents were just too high for us to be able to make it work at that point in the business. And so we had to be very patient and choosy about what we did. And we were self-funding, because, I mean, nobody would have given us any money. There's no way. That was when not everybody was an entrepreneur, and everybody thought you went bankrupt doing fitness. So we basically started that first studio on West 72nd Street, and it took us 4 years to get to 7 studios.
Wow. Okay. You ended up selling to Equinox. How did that change? You know, when you are a founder like yourself and you're so passionate, you're so motivated and you're so driven by your why, and then you sell, no one talks to the person after they sell, right? It's like the end story. No one talks to them the year after. How did you feel and how did it change your life after that?
Oh my God. SoulCycle was a love child. Like, people loved that. I loved it. Julie loved it. Everyone who worked there. I mean, there was so much love emanating from that experience and that business. And when we sold it, you know, it was like ripping your heart out and like leaving it like in the middle of one of the avenues in Manhattan just to get crushed by taxis and anybody Grief. Else coming up the street. I mean, and those were decisions that we made. And we made good business decisions, but there's such an, I mean, it's just like, it was our child. It was our love child. I had 2 kids and SoulCycle.
Well, and you, as you mentioned at the very beginning of this conversation, you were motivated by community. You know, that was part of why you were motivated to start this, because you felt the need for a community yourself. And it was like fulfilling a personal need that you had. And wow, what a community you built. It's like emanating with sparkles, right? So what do you do when that's gone? I'm just wondering, like, you know, mentally, what did you do to kind of pick yourself back up and say, okay, where am I going to focus my attention now?
Oh my gosh. So a couple of things happened after we left SoulCycle, and it was challenging for both of us. I personally was like tired. I was kind of burned out, and Julie was less so. Like, she thrives on chaos. And so both, and then weirdly, it's like, it's also funny how things work out. So weirdly, both of my parents got sick at the same time. So I couldn't, we had a great exit on SoulCycle. So I could afford to go and spend some time with them, and they really needed my help. My dad passed away. My mom had Alzheimer's. So I'm like, so glad that I had the opportunity to really spend time with them. I feel really, really fortunate to be able to do that. Such a huge, huge gift from SoulCycle, among so many other things in my life. So, and then, but I also had a lot of energy, which I still do. And, you know, I really love helping entrepreneurs. I love just being there for people who are kind of in their moment of need around this. It's a very particular journey. And so I just spent a lot of time with founders and early stage folks and just doing what I could to be, you know, as supportive as I could be.
So this is great. You know, like, there's something so powerful about when you've learned so many lessons in life to be able to step in there when someone needs it and to really guide them and help them, which is, sounds like not only what you did post SoulCycle, but what you're doing now. Can you explain did you see patterns from working with so many founders? Like, what are the top 2 things they're coming to you for advice needing?
I think it's what's going on for everybody right now. Honestly, I think people are, they're alive, like they're impassioned, like they're looking for an aliveness that is just, you know, they're seeing things from in a different way, and they're trying to look at things from a different way so that they can win in whatever sector they're pursuing. You know, what I am more there for is that it's a lonely journey. It can be, especially if you don't have a partner, and there are not that many people who understand it, like really understand it. So there's kind of like just a need for support. I think people are deeply tired. You know, they wear a million hats all the time. They just need some support and honestly, like some kindness. So, you know, and then obviously all the other structure around business and just the kinds of decisions that you have to make every day. So that's...
No, that's not the answer I thought you would give me, but it's a really honest answer. And it probably speaks to the heart of the founder journey that at the end of the day, really someone to bounce ideas off and that human connection, which you talked about at the very beginning, is what you offer because you know that that's what they need deep down. Talk to me a little bit about starting Peoplehood. What is it and why did you start it?
So Julie and I wanted to start Peoplehood because we had been thinking a lot about what really worked, what were the essential kernels at SoulCycle that everybody connected with so much and that we connected with so much. And what we realized was what formed in those rooms was community around an experience. And it was a personal experience, but it was also something that was held by the group. And as a result of that, and really nearly all of the domestic, our domestic life was also on my shoulders. And we were having this company that was taking off. And so I met this coach who really helped me find time and find space in my life. And she helped us with some really important skills. And those skills were really based on the act of listening. And we found that when we use that as sort of a core tenant inside of the company, I think that's one of the reasons why people, like I made a t-shirt that said Utopia with the wheel in the eye, dot of the eye. And people wore that shirt because our office was so great. We had so much fun working together. And of course we had disagreements. People have different, I mean, Julie and I had huge disagreements. And what we learned was if we could just get somebody else, we could just get each other's worlds. Like, so I suspend my belief system for a short period of time in order to really understand what's going on with you. First of all, it's a generous act. And second of all, it makes me better as a partner to you to just without all the noise and without me trying to fix whatever I think you're going to say or respond, just really being in the moment, just listening to what you have to say without having to come up with a solution. And so we would do that with each other and then leave it and then come back the next day or then two days later, depending upon how hot the topic was for us. And in doing so, we were able to really find the right way forward. Because when you're in these environments, like we would riff off of each other and be like right on and right in alignment, but then we would hit a roadblock. And the thing is, and Julie says this all the time, she's so right. Like, we just think we're going to like make a friend and it's going to work out. We're going to get married and it's just going to work out. We're going to go to work and get a job and it's just going to work out. Like all our relationships are just going to take care of themselves and they're just going to work out. And that honestly, what are we talking about? The best indicator of our life and our health and longevity is the quality of our relationships. And we are providing ourselves no support for that in our culture. We've really stripped that out. And we're mammals. We're communal. It's just weird that we don't have these kinds of support. Anyway, I digress. So back to SoulCycle. Julie and I use this ourselves. We trained our front desks in being able to find a yes, to really listen to somebody who, we had wonderful customers. We had the most amazing humans that walked through that door. Sometimes people weren't having a good day and they did not bring their best selves to the front desk. And maybe it was even our fault. Like maybe it was their fault. Maybe it was whatever it was. Like it was a heated environment.
Did you say that one of your tenets is to find a yes?
Mm-hmm.
Is that one of your core principles?
It is. It is.
And what does it mean?
It means that anybody who works inside the organization should be empowered to make small or meaningful accommodations for a customer or a coworker. Mm. That's it.
Instead of immediately thinking, how can I say no, or that's not going to work, but training your mind to think, well, let's figure out a solution here.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Well, what you're describing in terms of leadership is like, you know, this concept of like feminine leadership and masculine leadership. And it's not something you hear talked about a lot, but I'm wondering if that's something you've studied or heard about, because what you're saying to me, especially with the part about listening and not necessarily having to act, but to just letting it be, really feels like it falls under the category of feminine leadership and looking at things from a different perspective. Is that something that's sort of in your lexicon or something that you've studied or thought about?
It's not, but I can just tell by the name that it resonates with me. I think it makes a lot of sense because we had an org chart, obviously, for our decks and all that. But the way that we really operated, I used to describe it as a galaxy because ideas would just come from anywhere. And I assume that that's a feminine. I'd love to know more.
I've heard it. Sarah Blakely from Spanx first talked about it, and she felt like there was more need for more feminine energy in especially in terms of business. And like, but what does that look like? And I feel like what you're describing and how you're speaking kind of falls into that category. Can you talk a little bit more about what is peoplehood? Because I'd like a little bit more specificity about what is peoplehood and the vision you have for it.
Peoplehood is a 1-hour facilitated conversation online or in person for individuals, couples, or work teams. What we do is we have architected an hour-long experience where you leave feeling better than when you walked in the front door. And it has many of the elements for those who are familiar with SoulCycle of that experience, but without any fitness equipment.
which is kind of like a hard thing to visualize.
Yeah.
But I think it is really more about the feeling of what the experience is like. So what we do is we come together with a small group. It can be anywhere from, we do 16 to 20. We can do larger groups for the at work product. But basically, like, what happens inside of the group is that there's a facilitator who's basically holding space for this group of people. And we have a theme. The conversations are always themed. Mm-hmm. And so depending upon what that theme is, the facilitator will, we call them guides. There's music playing in the background to just kind of like help you relax a little bit. And then we do some breath work. And the reason why we do the breath work is to move your thinking into just a different mode so that you are more relaxed and that you can be in a more collaborative and co-creative brain space. And then the guides will ask a question to the group that's pretty simple, like, how are you doing really? And then we just kind of like sink into what that the answer to that is. And it could be, I'm doing great. My daughter's going to college tomorrow and I am so excited for her. Or I spent last night with my mom who has Alzheimer's and I just see her fading. And so I'm feeling a little blue, right? Because mm-hmm. both of those things can be true. So it's really up to you. Those are true for me for today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can really go where you want to go. And the experience of just being in an intentional conversation with a group of people is so powerful. And so you just leave feeling like more connected to these people, more connected to yourself. You've heard yourself think, our world is so incredibly distracted right now. It's actually amazing to be able to be in a one-on-one conversation with somebody because we break off into small groups, usually just one-on-one. And in that experience, you hear yourself think, which is such a gift in this distracted world that we're living in. It's hard to appreciate without experiencing it. And in some ways, it really reminds me of SoulCycle because there was always that moment, that aha moment in a SoulCycle class. And this is that for us at Peoplehood.
And so help me visualize this. Would it be like teams, like a team of coworkers come together? Or would it be family members? Who would be the group that would sign up for it? Who would be leading the charge to have a Peoplehood experience?
It's for all parts of our relational lives. Like Julie and I are really interested in relational wellness because if you look at the Venn diagram of all of the research out there, this sits right in the center of everything that's really needed right now. Whether you listen to the Vivek Murthy, the Surgeon General, or Dr. Bob Wallinger from the 85-year Harvard study, or I mean, just across the board. So the people who use this, look, I think that what we are finding is that work teams, people are doing it personally, and then they're like, oh my goodness, like I need to bring this to my team. People are doing it with their teams and being like, oh my goodness, I think I want this in my life. So it's just, there are two different entry points. For the work teams, it's such a cool thing because culture, I feel for all of us, it's just a lot of stress. Like I'm at home, I'm at work. There are just so many different aspects going on. And the first thing to go, unfortunately, is like the soft stuff, the connective tissue that holds us together, because the business, we can all identify like what the business need is. It's that water cooler. It is that silo buster of like knowing your colleagues that are in a different department that like really bring a lot of business richness to life. And for whatever reason, we're now allowing ourselves to strip that out. It's not good. It's not healthy for the business. It's not good for employees, whatever. I mean, it's just the reality of it. So we have created these 1-hour experiences that you can do with your team and they're phenomenal. And it's great because you feel a sense of connectivity to your coworkers that's has a more human component to it. So you're not necessarily talking about business issues. There could be themes that are going on, like wanting to, you know people cross-culturally more. And so we do intake with business leaders before we put together programs for the teams. But it's people are finding it. They feel better when they are finished than when they started. They can really notice that. And if you look at it sort of over the long term, teams are just able to feel more connected, whether they are working in person or online.
Connectivity and community, two words that you've mentioned a lot and clearly are very central to your why. I'm wondering, since you started SoulCycle to now and now working with Peoplehood, how has your why changed?
Interesting question about the why. I don't know if my why has changed, honestly. I think it's just a different part of the same continuum, frankly. Mm. With The why of Soul Cycle is because I was like just desperate to feed something inside myself and to like let go. And to be honest, that same thing happens to people when they come to peoplehood, you know, just to be in the presence of others, to have a conversation that you maybe wouldn't expect to have, whether it is on a topic that's germane to you, could be like around parenting, or whether it's just life or work. The idea that people can feel connected to each other and feel like they belong somewhere is compelling. And Julie and I just want to create something that people can trust and people can enjoy and people can get a lot out of.
I read somewhere that you studied at a monastery in India. Is that true? At one point in your life, were you? Yeah, okay.
It is.
Which is so interesting and so fascinating. What time of your life was that? And what did you learn from that experience?
I did it when I was in college. I did it for study abroad. I lived in a Burmese monastery in Bodh Gaya, India, which is where the Buddha attained enlightenment. And
incredible.
I got really interested in Buddhist studies as a just a philosophy, as a way to kind of like think about the human experience a little more differently. So yeah, I definitely have been drinking the Kool-Aid for a while. but that particular experience, it was really challenging, honestly. But I met one of my favorite people in the world there. Her name's Jaya Ashmore. And I actually just brought her to peoplehood last week. She works on something called deep rest, which allows us to access meditation through just fully resting. And when she says resting, like everybody had 6 pillows and 2 blankets. it was really, really relaxing. And so we did an experience like that here at Peoplehood. So we're also doing events and things here in the building to spotlight different ways that we can stay connected to ourselves and each other.
Isn't it interesting when you look back, you know, it's like looking the Steve Jobs quote about looking back on your life and seeing how the dots connected. When you look back on your life, and even like that was a very small part of your life, but clearly whatever you learned there has had an impact in everything you've done thus far. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, there's no question. Absolutely. And it is so fun to look back. I was just talking to a young person this morning who walked into Peoplehood. And she was saying that she had written her college essay about Soul Cycle, and I had never met her. And so it was just fun to meet. And it's interesting meeting young people because it is really true that the things that we think are random, she's in a job that she's sort of wondering, huh, certain aspects of it. And it is so cool to be able to have the benefit of time to be like, oh, well, I didn't understand why that was helpful to me, but thank goodness that I had that experience because it really informed my decision-making process on my present. And so it's just fun to be able to have those kinds of conversations to see how the dots end up connecting.
Right. Like it was clear that you were not going to go into investment banking, right? And look at everything you've done. Had you gone into investment banking, right? Like what would have happened? How can people support you? How can they find out about Peoplehood and learn more about you?
We're at peoplehood.com. And then we're also on the social channels at Peoplehood and then _ on Instagram. We're excited to continue those conversations and really bring this into the zeitgeist, because we think that when we look 5 years out, people will really fold this into their 360 wellness picture, as Julie always says, because the truth is that taking care of our relationships really have such a knock-on effect to everything else that we do. And there's so much benefit to be had if we create a home for it, that we think that people will really thrive in a different way. And God knows we could all use that.
We could all use that. Yes. I think it's fascinating that, you know, every aspect of what you've done is you've always kept in mind the broader audience and like how to serve them. And I feel like service is sort of at the heart of what you've done. There's something really powerful to something that's bigger than ourselves, isn't there? And to what degree do you think that has been part of your success?
It's been the cornerstone. And I'm so glad that you said that, actually, because we are here to serve. Like I feel for all of us. And it's so much better together. You know, we're just so much more able to co-regulate in groups. We're so much more able to make things happen in groups. And we're so much more, honestly, even with the complexities, like there's just joy to be found in the company of others when you can go through an experience together or align on a vision together.
Amen. Amen. This has been so nice. Elizabeth, thank you for this. Thank you for this conversation. Yeah, you have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to Dine For the podcast. For more information on the show, the guests, and the podcast, head to dinefortv.com. You can find us on Instagram at To Dine For TV and Facebook at To Dine For with Kate Sullivan. Thanks to the sponsors of To Dine For the podcast, American National Insurance. Special thank you to producer and sound editor John Golmer. To the loyal followers of this program, cheers, stay hungry, and stay inspired. I'll see you back at the table soon.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.